Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Paul Dottino, John Schmelk with you. And the phone number for you to be part of the show is 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us. Hope you're having a great week. OTAs continue. The next media availability for the OTAs will be on Friday afternoon. And then, of course, next week we have mandatory minicamp. And we then take a long, long break until we get to training camp at the end of July.
Don't remind me of the break. I don't like the break. 6 weeks off. I can't stand it. Not for us, by the way, but just for the team.
I will enjoy the break, and I'll be taking time off during that break as well. So
this is one time when the number 13 is great, and it's not unlucky because Giants minicamp starts on the 13th. 13, 14, and 15.
Now, a couple of things, folks, just in terms of logistics. Minicamp is the same as OTAs in terms of rules, in terms of contact and things like that. It's just mandatory. It's not voluntary. That's really the only difference.
I think they're allowed to be with the players a little longer.
Oh, correct. Yes, yes,
but
yes.
Hours are different.
Yeah, the timing allowed is also different. But in terms of rules for contact on the field,
correct,
all that stuff remains the same heading into mandatory minicamp. So a few things to keep in mind. Today, there was no practice. The players had the day off in terms of field work. They were in the building doing recovery stuff, some meeting, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we did have a chance to talk to every single Giants assistant coach this morning. I was out there. Paul was out there. No big news per se, but I think we kind of got a feel for some of the things that are going on in some of the individual position groups. And I guess we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. Let's go offensive line first. A lot of the talk with Mike Solari, the Giants offensive line coach, a lot of questions, no surprise, about Bobby Hart and Eric Flowers. He confirmed they were here a lot in the offseason before the official reporting date, mostly doing weight room work. Again, you can't work with the coaches then, so there really wasn't any technique work being done, but weight room work was getting done during that period of time. And both guys have had a really good attitude, but as I asked Mike Solari directly, and I showed it to Paulie Dottino, I think it might be on the website already, are you really going to know how much better these guys are until you get to camp with the pads on? He said, yeah, absolutely. You know, we can see, you know, some technique things now, but you don't know how that's going to translate when guys are going full speed with pads. So it's really a wait-and-see exercise, Paul, to see where the offensive line is at in terms of improvement from those two guys.
Yeah, the only thing we can say with certainty, and Mike was willing to say this, is that the guys, both Hart and Flowers, are much further along today than they were this time last year.
Especially physically.
Physically, if, in terms of sculpting their bodies,
right,
and conditioning and strength. That's for sure. And mentally, they also seem to be much further along in terms of comprehending what they're supposed to do. Now, the key word that John said was translate. That's the key word. Will it translate into a significantly better performance? I believe they'll be better. Mike said he thinks they'll be better. Do we know 150%? No. Do we know exactly how much? No. But I do like the fact that the offseason has gone in the right direction for those guys. It's certainly better than them not sculpting their bodies and not doing stuff with the weights and not paying attention to the films.
Coach Solari was also asked about DJ Fluker, about whether or not at some point he might be used at tackle because he's been used primarily at guard so far in the practices that have been open.
Yeah.
And he basically said that they like him at guard, and if he ends up being a backup, you might work him at tackle just so he has some position flex. But I think the Giants, Paul, see him as a guard. That's where they like him best. Given his body type and size, I think that makes a certain amount of sense. And it'll be him and John Jerry competing for that right guard spot.
Yeah, I think especially after they drafted Bisnovati in the draft, it seems to me they really like his prospects at backing up at right tackle. We said this on the show yesterday with Lance, that if he's working as the second-team right tackle, which he has done in the springtime, it makes sense that Fluker starts working at second-team right guard, if only because Bisnovati's probably better suited outside and Fluker's probably better suited inside. Not that these guys won't enhance their versatility by taking snaps everywhere, but I think the Bisnovati part of this equation changed things for Fluker in that I don't see him necessarily competing with Hart as much anymore, as Solari told you. He's more going to be competing with John Jerry, and that's not an impossible job to win.
No, it's not. A couple other notes I want to make in terms of the running back position. Talk to Craig Johnson. He likes Paul Perkins, likes the fact that he can make like that first free runner miss. He seemed to be pretty confident about Orleans Darkwa being able to make some noise here if he can stay healthy. And that was the kind of the key that he kept pointing out with Orleans Darkwa. If he can stay on the field, he has a real chance to make this roster, but he has to stay on the field.
Yeah, totally agree with you, John. And that's the one thing that you're going to say about a number of guys, guys like Matt Lacoste, who would like a job on this team. A guy like Orleans Darkwa would like a job on the team. Mykel Thompson would love to have a job on this team. If you can't stay on the field during training camp and in the preseason, it's going to be real hard to be on the 53.
Yeah, absolutely. And I asked him about Paul Perkins as well, and I said, Coach, you know, he carried the load at UCLA. You know, he carried 20 times a game at UCLA. You know, what do you think he can do at the pro level? And he goes, it remains to be seen. That's something we're going to have to figure out. So I still think they're trying to figure out exactly how big of a load they're going to put on Paul Perkins' shoulders.
Well, I think part of that equation is going to be when they finally figure out who the running back class is going to be, then they got to say, okay, well, how are we going to define these roles? And let's face it, if Gallman doesn't come along quick enough, look, we know he's going to make the team. He's a fourth-round pick. I mean, fifth-round pick. He's going to make the team.
Of course.
Obviously. Obviously he's going to make the team. So we know Gallman, fourth-round pick, I should say. We know he's going to make the team. But how much is he going to do? Well, guess what? Maybe he looks at the playbook, gets overwhelmed, and doesn't pick it up.
And that is a big challenge for running backs.
It can happen.
Sure.
I mean, he wouldn't be the first guy who had trouble in his rookie season figuring out what to do. Well, then all of a sudden, wait a minute. Hey, Paul, guess what? You may have a few more extra snaps every week because we can't afford to put Gallman in there. He's not quite sure what he's got to do.
Yeah.
Darkwood doesn't stay healthy. Guess what? Those few snaps we might have given him, can't give it to him. He's not available. So I think that's what he's talking about. I don't think you can define a role right now for any of these guys.
And then you have Sean Drone, who really did a little bit of everything for the 49ers. So he's a guy that you can, you know, kind of fill in a lot of different areas. For the tight end spot, talked to Kevin Gilbride Jr. a little bit. I asked about Evan Engram, and I asked him, you know, does his special skill set allow you to play him outside more than maybe you've played the other tight ends in the past? He said yes, but then on his own volition, without me even asking, he said, you know what, but we're going to play him in line. And he's shown the willingness and the attitude to block, and he thinks that he can become a guy that can hold his own on the line of scrimmage as a blocker. And like we've said, he's not going to be a guy that's going to blow guys off the line, but the way Kevin Gilbride Jr. spoke, he believes he can be an inline tight end that can hold his own as a blocker,
John,
in certain schemes.
Everything I'm hearing from everybody, and not just today, but I'm talking about everybody around this facility, the coaches, the players, they really, really like this kid's potential. They really think that he's not just going to be really good, but that he's going to be really good quickly. Look, God bless him. I hope it happens for his sake. I hope it happens for the Giants' sake. I don't want to raise the bar too high on this kid because he's still walking into a new situation. But all arrows look like he's going to be a very productive player immediately.
He talked about Jarrell Adams a little bit, how he's more comfortable, but he's still a little too inconsistent, and he has to get better in that respect. And, of course, Red Ellison, I thought it was interesting. He said the last 2 years he played almost exclusively on the line of scrimmage for Minnesota, but Red has made it abundantly clear that he's very comfortable blocking out of the backfield. So that'll give them some versatility in terms of where they use Ellison. Last offensive position, of course, is the wide receiver and quarterbacks, the last two. Not a whole lot to talk about with those groups in terms of what we've seen so far. Brandon Marshall fitting in quickly, doing a good job. The quarterbacks coach is very happy with the arm strength of all the guys in his group. But he thinks the guys have really embraced working in the classroom together and really learning that system and getting things together. And one more thing at the wide receiver spot, Paul, the battle for that last wide receiver spot and a couple wide receiver spots is hot and heavy.
Yeah, it's going to be tight. And I don't get the opinion from anything that's been said that anybody has a leg up. I don't think guys like Tavares King and Roger Lewis can rest on the fact that they're the incumbents.
No.
That doesn't mean they're going to get anything handed to them.
Guys like Travis Rudolph, the undrafted free agent, he's showing up at practice time and time again. So,
you know,
yeah.
I do think one other thing about the receivers.
Please.
I thought Adam Henry, the receivers coach, was very good in talking about Brandon Marshall, who he said was caught off guard because Adam's very strong into detail. And he said, funny thing, you know, he was asked, Marshall has come in here with great experience, great resume, done practically everything you could do as a wide receiver. don't you get a little talk back from him like, no, coach, I got this. I know what I'm doing. And he said, no.
Oh, that's interesting. I wasn't there for that question.
Yeah. He talked a long time.
Yeah.
And he said, no, the thing about Brandon is, you know, I'm really a stickler on details with him, every little minute thing. And he's willing to listen, and he's willing to comprehend and come back. And he'll come back at me and say, okay, what about this? And he says they have a real good give and take. And it's almost like Adam was saying, he's having fun kind of teaching the old dog some new tricks. So I thought that was an interesting dynamic. And I also thought that the quarterbacks thing, three of the four quarterbacks, and that's Sans, Webb, are wearing gloves on their left hand.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, what did he say about that?
During the spring workouts. And Coach Cignetti, the quarterback's coach, said it's simply for their grip.
That's what I think.
And holding on to the ball. It has nothing to do with their throwing, because remember, it's on the left hand, not the right hand. Simply has to do with their grip right now. And, look, I don't know if they're going to wear it during the season or not. He didn't seem to know either. But at least for the time being, that's the way they're working.
All right, let's go to the defensive side of the ball real quick before we get to your calls. I see we got a full bank. I'll get to them in a couple minutes.
Cool.
But not a whole lot to talk about the assistants on defense about, because so much is really kind of in the bank.
I agree.
A couple things from Patrick Graham. He likes the depth they have right now at a lot of these positions, coaching up the young guys. Dalvin Tomlinson has come in. You know, smart kid. He's kind of picked things up quickly. He was happy with him. Coach Mack, the linebackers coach, Bill McGovern, he's a guy, Paul, that – talked a lot about B.J. Goodson, and that's what a lot of the questions were about, not surprisingly. And he seemed to be pretty happy with the job he's done and the improvement he's made from year one to year two.
Mentally, he seems to be passing all the tests the Giants have thrown at him to this point. But again, that's another spot where until the physicality starts, you're not really going to know.
And I asked him about how he's doing in coverage. I've seen him. They've actually used him in a couple nickel situations over the course of practice. And, you know, he's a guy that they're still figuring out what he's able to give you in the coverage part of the game.
Yeah, I think the interesting part for me that Coach McGovern said is that he was asked specifically, I know you guys are a 4-3 team, but your linebackers don't really get sacks on this team. And so he was asked, like, is that a concern? Do you have to get more sacks? And he was like, no, it's all about what Spags wants to do with the system and who he's going to send. The beauty of what he's got here is he's got so many talented players in the front seven that – he can do a number of different things with different guys. And what Coach McGovern said, what he loves specifically about Spags, and it's something we've talked about now for a long time, is that Spags will identify those things that guy does well. Like Keenan Robinson is really good in coverage, and he's going to be doing a lot of coverage. Devon Kennard is obviously better when he's moving forward and when he's trying to either plug a slot or if he's trying to rush the passer. That's what they got him to do. And so that's really what Coach was saying, that it's not about what Spags, wants to do in general. It's about how he zeroes in on each guy's thing and then toys with it.
And then in the secondary, the only really question in terms of positions is free safety next to Landon Collins, and Dave Merritt spoke a lot about that. Happy with the way Darian Thompson's come back. He's competing with Andrew Adams. The idea that I got is that he'd like to kind of pick one guy to be the first-string guy by the time training camp starts and kind of slide him in there and then, kind of work the depth chart from there. Not to say there won't be competition, but this is to keep the same group of players together when they're on the field so they get continuity, which I do think is important. And he made the point that, Darian Thompson, he's a ball hawk. He's a guy. He did make the point that he's been a lot better with his run fits than he has been last year, and that even though he wasn't on the field for most of the year last year, Paul, he used the classroom time extremely well, where he really did learn stuff, and he really thinks he's going to step in and be pretty good right away.
John, you and I have been around, and certainly me, a long time, but you've seen it as well. A lot of guys, when they get hurt, they'll stay. Other guys, when they get hurt, you don't see them a whole lot.
We saw Darian Thompson all the time.
All the time.
All the time. Absolutely.
I mean, he would be at his locker all the time, had that playbook all the time. And, I can't say enough about this kid's love for the game, because he really does love the game. I've talked to him. He loves the game. It was devastating to him that he could not play last season because of the injury. He was just so crushed by this. He was so sad, especially when the team was making the playoff run. He's like, oh, man, I really want to help these guys. I want to be out there and experience this. So I feel that he has tremendous hunger, and I just think he's going to hit the ground running.
201-939-4513. Anything else you got from Vidi Vels today, Paul?
I can't think of anything because we didn't have any special teams coaching today.
Dwayne Stukes is out there. But
was he? I didn't see him.
Oh, you didn't see him? He was out there.
Oh, I didn't see him. Sorry. Coach, no disrespect. I didn't see him.
Wow.
I didn't see him.
I'm going to tell him about that.
I didn't see him.
Christian in Long Island. He's up first. Hi, Christian.
Salute.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Hi. Thanks, Christian.
All right. Just a quick one, and I can take it off the air.
Yeah,
I just
take
wanted
your time,
to know
man.
What
You're
you guys
okay.
thought on the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball were the most interesting position battles and the dark horse candidates from undrafted free agents to make the team on both sides as well.
Ooh, okay. That's a good question, Christian. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's start with dark horse guys that are undrafted free agents. I think Travis Rudolph has a real chance to challenge a wide receiver.
Agreed.
I've liked what I've seen out of him.
Yep. We should probably call up the roster.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
You know, because right now, to just start naming free agents off the top of our heads is pretty tough. I will tell you this.
Let's set up by position here. We
have not seen nearly enough. Okay, not nearly enough to really. I know I'm not going to name my dark horse guy till we get to August, but at this point, we have not seen nearly enough to really make a lot of these judgments. I will tell you, just based on what I know from their college tape. And first of all, I agree with you about Rudolph. I did say that, didn't I? But I do agree with you on him. Just based on the college tape. Where is he?
What position are you looking for?
Like the cornerback from Iowa State. I'm forgetting his name.
Nigel Tribune.
I like his college tape. So right now, he is on my radar. I may not like what I see at minicamp. I may not like what I see at the end of July.
And it is an open competition, by the way, for the back end of the cornerback depth chart.
Yes, it is.
There is an opportunity there.
Yes, there is. I like what I see on the college tape. I like his cover skills. I like his physicality. He tackles very well. What I think he needs to polish up, and I'm going to have to see that out here on the field, I'd like to see him finish more plays. And that is much like Will Allen. If you remember Will Allen some years ago with the Giants when he was a corner out of Syracuse, he'd always be there, and then he'd wind up giving up the reception. He was there, perfect position, make the play, and the ball would go through his hands. And you'd be like, oh, I don't believe it, he was there. Will Allen could cover with the best of them. He just couldn't finish breaking up the play or coming down with the interception. Tribune showed me that at Iowa State. I see a guy who's got all the physical attributes, but I don't know if he's going to be able to polish up finishing plays and how he's going to do covering at this level. Keep your eye on him. I'm intrigued.
And the other thing he asked about was positions of question, right? Where we don't know who's going to be in start. I mean, I think, see, Lance always says safety. I would be surprised if Darian Thompson not the starter myself, so I'm not going to throw that in there. I think middle linebacker and how they rotate Goodson, Casillas, and Keenan Robinson for two spots. You know, I think Devon Kennard is going to be that, you know, run-stopping, strong side linebacker.
Yep.
I'm curious to see how they use those other three guys and how they rotate them. I think that's interesting on defense. Who's the backup defensive tackle? I'm assuming Tomlinson's going to earn that starting spot.
I would agree.
Will it be Robert Thomas or Jay Bromley? Who's going to be the backup defensive ends for that matter? And by the way, I like Devin Taylor. I've liked what I've seen out of him. He's a veteran. I would not be surprised if Devin Taylor is on this team.
See, these are all depth chart questions.
Yeah.
The good news is the Giants are a good enough team now where we pretty much know who the starters are going to be, although I think Fluker's going to challenge on the O-line.
Well, I was going to go to the offense next, so you think – see,
I think Fluker can challenge Jerry. I
think
I really
he'll
do.
Challenge. I'd be surprised if Jerry lost the spot. I think how they use the tight ends will be interesting.
Sure it will.
And how they rotate him and how they use him even formationally, I think that's going to be interesting. I think how much Paul Perkins, how many carries he gets, how much he plays, I think will be interesting. And
these are all situational substitution questions.
And the fifth and sixth wide receivers,
yeah.
I guess.
That's what it is.
The backup tackle on offense, maybe?
It's situational substitution questions.
Backup quarterback?
You know? I will say that, yeah, well, the backup quarterback's a question.
Sure.
You know, we don't think Davis Webb is going to be the two. It's
no.
pretty clear he's going to be the three.
Correct.
Who gets the two? I can't tell you between those two guys right now, Johnson and Geno.
Well, the funny thing about Josh Johnson, too, and I kind of said this when I was talking to the coaches this morning, the fans have never seen Josh Johnson play. He wasn't in, preseason last year. He wasn't
that one
in
year
camp.
In Tampa where he put up some numbers.
Yeah, but the fans never saw him play as a Giant, even in training camp. So, we don't have a real the fans don't have a real good feel for him yet. And I think Geno Smith will be good to go off the knee injury come camp. He's only doing 7-on-7 now. He's not really doing team stuff. So I think it'll be interesting to see how those two guys compete for that second spot.
Yeah, I mean,
nothing super exciting, but it is what it is.
No, I mean, yeah. What's his total games? They don't put total games on this thing. No, you believe this? They don't.
So
I gotta add it by myself. 1-5. He has started 5 games in his entire NFL
and
career.
Played in 29.
That's it.
Yep.
I mean, it's not much of a sample size. So
guys, like Paul said, the team is to the point now, and this is why I think this is probably the most, balanced and talented roster the Giants have had, maybe even since 2008. And I think, there's not a lot of starting jobs at stake. Doesn't mean there's not stuff to watch and stuff to see, but there's not a lot of starting jobs at stake. You got defensive tackle, safety to an extent, linebackers, tight end, and that's kind of it.
It's the depth chart is really where all the questions are. Those are where the battles are going to be, and which is why I love training camp and I love the preseason. Anyway,
let's go to Jake in Vermont. He's on line 3. He's next. Hi, Jake. How are you?
Hey guys, how we doing?
Hi. Well, what's up?
I'm actually kind of starstruck here. I listen to your guys' show all the time and never get to actually listen to a show live because I'm at work here. I'm glad to catch Polly. I was listening to yesterday's show this morning, and I wanted to get into the Beckham celebration deal.
Okay.
The changing the rule, I could care less because Beckham's always been great as far as doing his little dance and then done with and carrying on. And I love that. So I don't think the rule really affects the Giants as much as anybody else. But another thing I wanted to touch on was the Beckham and Norman situation. I heard a guy talk about Odell Beckham and the behavior in the Carolina game. I've got buddies that defend Odell hands down in that situation. I love the guy. I think he's, the greatest thing since sliced bread. But I think the attitude, the behavior that he showed took him out of the game. If we actually watched that game, it did affect his production. I think it really affected the team's overall production because of, the overboard that he kind of got into.
2 years ago, though, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he won the battle against Norman last year.
Sure he did.
Oh,
I agree
absolutely,
with that.
Absolutely.
Jake,
I don't even think Norman's top of the tier. I think Beckham's embarrassed him every time they've played as long as Odell stayed in the game.
Well, here's the bottom line, Jake. Look, no one in this league, I don't care what corner is, can guard Odell Beckham Jr. one-on-one. Even the best corner in the league can't guard Odell Beckham Jr. one-on-one. He's too good. He's that I'm serious. He's that dynamic of a player. You can't guard Antonio Brown one-on-one. You can't go out there and guard A.J. Green one-on-one. These guys are too good. And the way the rules are now, you just can't do it. You need to have safety up over the top. It's just the way the game is now. And in terms of the overall point you're trying to make, look, I mean, Jerry Reese said it after the season. Odell Beckham Jr. is a young guy. And, there are areas where guys will mature naturally over the course of their career. And I think that's kind of the point where you're at here with Odell. It's that simple.
Right. One other thing, the Odell, the camps being mandatory, I heard Paulie got kind of animated about that yesterday. And, I totally understand that it's mandatory. And
it's
voluntary. Am I upset because he didn't show up?
Yeah,
no.
Not mandatory.
But if you look in, you look at it, what is, supposed to be the best part of our offense, that's our passing game. We get Brandon Marshall, bring in this great veteran who I think is going to be tremendous for the team and for Odell. You would at least think that he would put enough emphasis or care enough to show up and say, hey, look, I'm here. I want to do the work. Timing and rhythm and all that stuff with your quarterback is, utmost importance. And here he missed the workout with them guys down in Duke. And, then he don't show up for the – I mean, I think I would just love to see, a little bit more – hey, I'm here. Let's do this. I'm ready to win myself. I think that would be a kind of a good thing. But last thing I want to bother you guys with is Fluker. I've heard you talk about Fluker. I know you're big on Fluker. Love the guy. Everything I've heard about him, I think he's going to make a big difference in our offensive line. And I think the best thing I've heard about him that I want to remind everybody is he's the hardest worker. You know, he was the hardest worker in San Diego's offensive line for as long as he's been there, hands down, you know, is what I've heard the coaching staff in San Diego say. And what really can you ask for more than, you know, hey, go out there and work for us, you know?
No, I appreciate it, Jay. Thanks for the call, man.
I will say this about Fluker. If he doesn't win a job in the starting five, you put him in that jumbo package on the edge, okay? Because in a short yardage package, Fluker is not going to be worried about dealing with a speed rusher on the edge at right tackle. Okay, so you put him outside of Bobby Hart's right shoulder and make him the sixth offensive lineman as the reporting tight end. 350 pounds.
TJ and now Fluker say, as a reporting tight end is what's scary proposition.
Okay, but now you say, okay, guess what? Bam, we're going to run that ball right behind his butt, and he is going to obliterate any outside linebacker who tries to line up opposite him.
You're not wrong. He's a big boy now. He's a big boy.
Massive. He's a big, big man. So I think Fluker is going to have an impact on this team, even if he doesn't win a starting job. I really do.
And on the Beckham thing real quick, look, Ben McAdoo said it. The preference is that all the guys are here. They'll coach the guys that are here. I don't think you're ever going to get to a point where you're in week three of the season. You're like, boy, Odell Beckham would have caught that ball if he was at the third OTA. So I don't think there's going to be a long-term meaningful
do
impact.
Do you guys?
So I wouldn't lose your minds about it. Let me put it that way.
I haven't said this one before, but I might as well. Do you know how many voluntary workouts Michael Strahan missed during his career?
Usually later in his career, though, in fairness.
But a lot.
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely.
A lot.
And you go around the league, there's a bunch of really good players that aren't at their OTAs.
And a bunch of really good Giants who missed voluntary workouts.
Sure.
For years. Didn't prevent them from winning four Super Bowls, folks. Done.
Let's go to Justin in Lakewood. He's up next. Hi, Justin. How are you? You're on line four. What's up, pal?
How you gentlemen doing today?
Doing great. Hi. Justin. What's up?
All right. Just a few quick things. I'll try to make them brief. I know you got some other callers.
That's okay. What's up?
Yeah. Well, as far as the whole thing with Beckham not showing up to OTAs, I think sometimes as fans, we get on the sidelines and in our minds, and we think we know what's best for the organization. The reality is, this is a guy who we drafted. He missed his whole preseason of his rookie season. He missed a number of games and came in and averaged over 100 yards per game.
That's
for
true.
God knows how long.
It's true.
So I don't know how anybody in their right mind could possibly think that OTAs, when you have about 93 guys out there battling for roster spots and so forth and so on, is going to magically give him some special time with Eli to build chemistry when you have other guys taking reps away, a lot of guys who aren't even going to be there. To be quite honest, it's actually, you know, it's somewhat of a risk for, you know, guys like that. He's a once-in-a lifetime talent. You know?
Well, Justin, so, remember, you know, this too, though. I will say this. People say it's a risk. I get that. But if he's, you know, working out really hard and training on his own, there's a risk to that too. So if you're doing anything, there's a risk.
Absolutely. It's just the fact that people, they neglect that part when they mention him not being at OTA.
Of course.
You know, so, you know, that's the only thing I'm bringing up. But, you know, I'll let that go. A quick comment about the celebration rules. You know, Paul, I know you're old school, and, you know, I heard a number of callers calling in yesterday, and, you know, they said that they don't really like the changes because they feel like things are going to be choreographed. And, you know, my feeling is this, you know, in the last couple of years watching the NFL, I've seen an expansion, not just here in America, is expanding globally. You know, we're going over to London, and, you know, the brand of football is changing as the broader audience is watching the game now. You know, there's a lot more women and children that are getting involved with it, and part of it is because of that element of, you know, seeing guys celebrate and different things like that. It's not always about the X's and O's with everyone, which I do like that part of football, and I appreciate that part of football, but, you know, it's reaching a higher demographic, and I think that's part of the league's reasoning and why they're allowing this right now. You know, it's somewhat of a financial benefit to them. You know, more people are going to tune in when they can see things like that, that, you know, some old school guys might find stupid or pointless, but it's entertaining to others, you know.
Justin, look, I don't mind it. Look,
it's an interesting point.
Justin, I'm honestly with you. You know, the celebration thing doesn't bother me. I just think you do risk having some of these huge, you know, team choreographed things that can get out of hand. I always worry about if a player shows somebody else up, in their celebration, that then the other player will try to take a shot at them on the field and, you know, things like that, you know, take out their legs or, you know, whatever else they're going to do if it's a real, you know, personal shot type of celebration thing. But I like the guys having fun. All the stuff that, you know, all the stuff that Chad Johnson used to do, I thought it was hilarious when he used to putt the football with the pylon and do all that stuff. He would put the baby to sleep. I thought that stuff was funny. That stuff didn't bother me.
Right. Yeah, and I get your point there, you know, because, you know, there is that element. But to be quite honest, you know, I was watching a program on the NFL Network, and they were basically talking about the trash talk that goes on between the lines. And some of that stuff gets pretty personal, and it gets pretty offensive.
Sure.
So, I mean, you know, that could also prompt that same thing even more so than the celebration at times, you know. But that's just my feeling on that. One last quick thing, and I'll let you guys go.
Sure.
Paul, I got to kind of get on you here about this. You made a comment the other day about LaDainian Tomlinson not being top 10. I literally ran to my computer after that and Googled top 10 running backs of all time. I looked at approximately 7 lists. He's top 10 in all of them, even top 5 in some. The reason I'm bringing that up is because the style that he played as running back, I feel that if we were able to find a running back that was that type, obviously there's only one LaDainian Tomlinson, let's not get ahead of ourselves, but somebody who could catch the ball as well as be a legit threat out of the backfield, run with power and get you hard yardage. Even a smaller stature guy is harder to tackle. I think that would be 100% what we need in this offense right now. If Paul Perkins can develop into a similar type of role where he's a guy that can come out of the backfield, get you hard yardage. You know, I know he's got a good jump cut, but he could still find end zone too. I was watching his highlight tape. He squirms through and he gets that hard yardage. But if he can also become a receiving threat like that, where you really don't know what this guy's going to do and how you're going to stop it, I think this would take this offense to higher heights, you know, along with the additions of, you know, the guys that we had in the offseason. I just kind of wanted to get your idea about that.
Thank you, Justin. Appreciate the call, man. Good stuff.
Yeah, my argument with the caller and Lance yesterday was that LaDainian Tomlinson, for me, would not be in my top 10 NFL running backs of all time. Could he be in the top 15? Yeah. Maybe he could be in the top 15.
Top 5, no.
No way top 5.
Top 10, I'd have to really think about it. All right, let me think just offhand.
Just make this real simple.
Offhand who I put ahead of him. Just monitor. I'll go backwards.
Well, you know who the
time.
Top guys are.
You know Emmitt's ahead of him. You know Barry Sanders is ahead of him.
You know Peyton's ahead of him.
Garrett,
Jim Brown's
Peyton,
ahead of him.
Jim Brown. Do you put Gail Sayers ahead of him?
You could if you want to.
How about Earl Campbell?
How about Riggins? Franco Harris?
I wouldn't put John Riggins ahead of him.
Marcus Allen. Come on.
I think Marcus Allen and LaDainian are very close.
I'd take Marcus Allen anytime. Tony Dorsett.
Very close. I think Tony Dorsett and LaDainian are very close.
I mean, you know, Lance mentioned Adrian Peterson.
I think AP and Tomlinson. I think Tomlinson is
probably Marshall Faulk.
You know what? I was going to bring up Faulk. I think Faulk and Tomlinson is an interesting discussion.
I'm a Herschel Walker guy.
Yeah, but he's not better than LaDainian Tomlinson. Come on.
I'm a big Herschel guy.
You can't count his USFL stuff, though.
I understand. It's disappointing, but. You know, I still intend to LaDainian Tomlinson return kicks. Herschel did that.
All right, that's fine. But, I mean, LaDainian Tomlinson was like a 1,500-yard rusher for 4 or 5 years. I mean, he was really, really good.
Again, Herschel was victimized by circumstances.
No, I understand, of course. I know that.
But, you know, I'd take Herschel over Tomlinson on my team any day of the week. Now, what the numbers say could be a little different, but I'd take Herschel. Herschel was I'll tell you what. Bo Jackson would have been too had he stuck around.
Well, yeah, but that's
Earl Campbell. How about Earl Campbell?
I said Earl Campbell.
Oh, did you say Earl?
I said Earl Campbell.
Okay.
And Earl Campbell had him and Gale Sayers with very short shelf lives. I get that.
Again, Franco, O.J. Simpson.
O.J.
Come on.
O.J. has to be ahead of LaDainian.
Well, we've probably put about 10 guys on the table right there.
Well, you're listing a bunch of guys I don't agree with, though.
Right. Anyway.
I can't put Herschel Walker ahead of LaDainian Tomlinson.
All right, so that's okay.
Is Herschel in the Hall of Fame?
I think he should be.
But he's not.
I know.
It's not even close.
By the way, it's the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I understand.
Which means his USFL attributes should count. Herschel Walker should be in Canton. I'm very strong on that.
Wow, for a guy that played for the Eagles and the Cowboys, you're a big Herschel Walker guy.
Huge Herschel Walker guy. And must understand something, too. It's the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. That's why Bill Bradley's in. Because of his Princeton exploits more than the Knicks.
The Basketball Hall of Fame is also a joke.
Okay, but
they had a million people.
It is the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Herschel should be in, just like I believe Warren Moon should have been a first ballot because of what he did in Canada. It's the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
I guess.
Hey, he's in anyway. He's in anyway.
Here's the top 10 running backs of – oh, here we go. NFL.com. Here we go. Top 10
Barry Sanders.
I said Barry.
Oh, did you?
Top 10 running backs of all time. Here we go. All right? This is from Elliot Harrison. So take this with a grain of salt if you like. And some of these I already disagree.
He's pretty good.
He's okay. Oh, I know one guy on this list that we forgot, too. That is that also is ahead of LaDainian Thomas, and I'll get to him in a second. He has Walter Payton at one. It's fine. Where's Jim Brown on this list, by the way, Dominic?
Jim Brown's not on that list?
No.
Well,
there are other older guys on there. Maybe it's like after 1970 or something like that. Is that why Jim Brown maybe isn't on here?
If he's not, then the list is just bogus.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that it's some type of like rules omission.
Okay.
So I'll throw Jim Brown there. He has Walter Payton at two. Barry Sanders next. Oh, what is this? Super Bowl era. Super Bowl era running backs.
Okay.
That's why. Okay. So Walter Payton, Barry, Emmitt, OJ, Dickerson, who we did not remember.
I think he's on the second part of the list, but I think he could be in there.
Then Dorsett.
I talked about him yesterday a little bit.
Then Dorsett.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then Tomlinson. Then Peterson. Then Falk. Then Earl Campbell.
Surprised that not Franco Harrison there. I really am. Franco was incredible. And on a dynasty team that was the greatest dynasty in modern football history.
Doesn't hurt that he's a Paisan. For your list. That puts him up 3-1 automatically, right?
I just love Franco.
See, folks, you got to get to the bottom of how Tito thinks about these things.
No,
Paisan puts them up here.
When you go to Pittsburgh and you go to the airport in Pittsburgh, there is a life-size Franco Harris statue. And it's very good, by the way. Do you not admit?
It's a nice statue.
It is a lifelike, great replica.
I like the George Washington one better, but that's me.
That's fine. But Franco... And it's the immaculate reception.
Yes.
And
the ball's not hitting the ground, by the way, on that particular statue.
No. No, should it be.
Not a surprise.
But here's the thing. Do you know every time I go to Pittsburgh, and I'm there a lot for college football and college basketball every year, every time I go there, I go up and I tap Franco on the arm. They're not supposed to touch him. You're not supposed to touch him. But I tap Franco on the arm. Just
now, someone's gonna be waiting for you in Pittsburgh
great
next
job.
Time you fly there, and they're gonna put you in cuffs.
I'm a huge.
By the
Franco
way,
guy.
Isn't there another part of that immaculate reception thing? It's not just that the ball hit the ground. Like, isn't it like if like the offensive player touched the ball on the deflection, it shouldn't have counted too, right?
When Bradshaw fired it over the middle, there was a collision.
Collision, right? Defensive back receiver.
Correct. And the question becomes: was the ball illegally caught by Franco? Because if the ball did not touch a Raider and bounced off of a Steeler. And then was caught by Franco, it would be illegal.
And that's no longer in the rules, by the way. That was a rule from the 70s. So if the ball had to have been touched by the defensive player
Correct.
In order for that to be legal catch.
Correct.
And that seems to be supported by video evidence more so than the ball not hitting the ground, right?
I think it is, but you know, again, it depends on how you see it. Raiders fans to this day
say that I know.
They'll tell you they believe that it wasn't touched by a Raider. And it's kind of like when Jackie Robinson stole home on Yogi Berra. And Yogi, to his dying breath, said, no, he was out. I got him. And you look at the video 5,000 times and
safe.
You can't be sure.
No, he looks safe.
You think so?
I'm a Yankee guy. Look,
see, and I don't think so.
More than me, I think he looks safe.
You talk about a Paisan. I'm sticking with Yogi. He's out. He is out. Between Yogi and the scooter... Jackie Robinson is out. Please.
David Maryland. Dave, help me, please.
Hello. Hey, how you guys doing, man?
What's up, Dave?
I just wanted to make a statement about that, but first I'm going to go back to what Jake said about the Odell Beckham thing years ago. I think Odell Beckham was the new star, the new kid on the block, and everybody wanted a piece of him. And you could tell it was off the field. Like, they had been bickering for a while because – they were mouthing before the game even started. I think Odell went out there. He lost himself. But at the end, what he did was he started to produce and he energized the team. And we came back in that game. And I think it's because he showed a lot of heart. Yeah, immaturity, but he's young.
Yeah, Dave, remember
I like
this too. Josh Norman does that to everybody. He did that to Des Bryant last year too. He does. Josh Norman is not – there was a reason he was a mid-round pick. He's not the most physically gifted guy in the world. And give him a ton of credit
for playing
for making
games.
The most of the
yes.
talent that was given
yes.
to him. He has overachieved as much as any other player in the league in terms of what was God-given to him and what he's become. Give him credit for that. He is an excellent football player. But, like Paul said, he likes to use these mind games to try to give himself an advantage over these other receivers. He's already started in this year.
Absolutely.
With Alshon Jeffery, with Dez Bryant, yep. with Odell Beckham Jr., and he's trying to do it again, and you have to rise above it.
And I want to just one final time, because we talked about this so much 2 years ago and even a little bit last year when they played the Redskins because Norman went to Washington. I'm going to say this one final time, okay? What were the Panthers doing bringing a baseball bat onto the field during warmups? Do you see NBA players bring hockey sticks onto the field during shoot-arounds?
Now, but they did that for every game, though. Isn't that correct?
The point is, what are they doing
right,
with
no,
it?
I hear
somebody
no
from the league, somebody from the league should have put a stop to that immediately. That is a baseball piece of equipment.
Let's not rehash the whole
it
thing.
It doesn't belong on a
Let's
football
field. Let's not rehash the whole thing.
Well, I don't
ago.
Want
please,
to, but
please.
That to me, was the crux of the whole problem before anything even started during the game. Why was that allowed to start from the very beginning?
That's fair.
Forget it. All right.
Yeah.
Move on. What's next?
Oh, nothing. Just moving along. I think he bounced back, and I think he'll be a better person from it moving on.
Absolutely.
But if in any way, shape, or form that, I mean, greatest talent, I think Paul pointed out that he's anatomically uncoverable based on the way – it was either Paul or Jeff – based on the way he could change directions without losing speed.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if moving forward, if he's going to be a detriment to the team, I'm a Giants fan. If we could get some good stuff for him, I'd rather trade him than have him think that he's the team, you know, because there's 53 other men on the roster. And that's going to lead me into my last question. You guys touched on it a lot. How important is it that we have the depth that we have? I'll let y'all reiterate, and I'll take this offline. Always a pleasure, guys.
Go ahead.
I don't think I heard the rest of his question. He said, how important is it that we have, and I thought that's where he got cut off. I didn't hear the rest of the question.
That was responding to it.
I think he meant how important is that we have depth at receiver
yeah.
in case Odell should go off the tracks. I think that's what he was trying to allude to. I hope so, at least. And my answer to you is, yeah, absolutely it's important. Because the Giants right now are meant to win now. That's how they're built. And if any of their key players should go off the tracks, this is why we're talking at the beginning of the show about questions at several positions yeah. on the depth chart. Because if the Giants can solidify and fill out some of these thin spots, they're going to be all the better for it come December.
Couple of things on Twitter to the running back discussion. Our boy Steve down in D.C. throws out two running backs. One he throws out is Ricky Waters, who was good, but I wouldn't put him in that type of
no.
pantheon.
Really good.
The other one, though, is interesting, and I don't think I'd put him in the top 10, but I think he's top 20. How about Roger Craig?
Roger Craig, no. The career numbers and the dominance, not long enough. And if you'll look.
But the other one is receiving numbers as well, of course.
He truly was a poor man's Marcus Allen. Marcus Allen's the standard by which those dual-threat running backs, to me, need to be measured.
See,
he was the guy.
See, to me, it's Marshall Faulk. To me, he's the perfect. I mean, Marshall
yeah, but,
Faulk.
But Allen came before him
right,
and
true.
Was longer than him.
That's true.
See, he established it.
See, Marcus Allen did a lot of that when I was still too young. I mean, Marcus Allen did a lot of that in the early and mid-'80s when I was like 5 years old or whatever, or less than that.
I'll tell
so.
You a guy who's on Roger Craig's level as the poor man's version of it, Chuck Foreman, when he was with the Minnesota
Chuck
Vikings.
Foreman with the Vikings. How about that?
He was that – did not have the longevity, mm-hmm. the dominance and the longevity. But Chuck Foreman was every bit like one of those guys. He just didn't do it long enough.
I said this last week. I want to know what your opinion is. If you were to draft the football team, would you rather have Jerome Bettis or Tiki Barber?
Oh, I'm taking Tiki Barber.
So would I.
But you know what?
I agree.
I mean – again, we're talking about guys who are terrific. Bettis is in the Hall of Fame. And Tiki, to me, was a Hall of Fame caliber player, retired a year or two too early, and
yep.
because of fumbleitis early in his career,
yep.
he's not in the Hall of Fame.
And Tiki's, to me,
but he's that caliber player.
Tiki's best 3 years, you could put them up next to any other running back seasons. And they're right there.
His best four, as good as anybody's.
Good as anybody's, absolutely.
All around capabilities, production, and percentage of the offense's production.
His usage was very, very
phenomenal.
High.
Phenomenal.
All right, a couple tweets here I want to get to. Paul, do you think this from James Jones at Lil underscore TNT 32? Okay. Do you think the Giants might go with a three safety look at times this year with Adams, Thompson, and Collins? I think only in obvious passing situations where you have rolling dime defense out there. That's it.
Yeah.
And only occasionally.
I don't think you're going to see more. I don't think they need to go to that. I think that creation was out of necessity.
I agree. Because that third corner back, that's when you're putting roll with slot and things like that. So
yeah, I don't think they really have to resort to that.
I agree with you. And Bill McInerney at WMCINE, where do you think Ellison makes more of an impact, tight end or fullback?
Well, probably a tight end. That's where he's going to get the bulk of his snaps. And whether or not he actually lines up at fullback depends upon whether or not they wind up keeping one. If Shane Smith winds up making this team, then he's going to be the fullback.
I'd be surprised by that.
I would too, but that's the one way. See, and we've said this before on other shows, John. I don't know if you were at the table. I think they keep three tight ends, and that's the only way Shane Smith has a chance to make the team as a fullback.
See, I think they could keep four tight ends because Ellison is also a fullback.
Option, though.
Right.
The option is you keep four tight ends, Ellison plays some fullback maybe five or six times a game.
Yeah, but you just signed Ellison to a significant contract. Mm-hmm. I want to use him. And he's a good fullback, so use him.
Absolutely.
That's why he's here. You use him.
I think what they do, they probably do is they put Shane Smith on the practice squad if they go with the four tight ends. Keep Ellison as a hybrid. Keep the four tight ends, and then Smith goes practice squad. I think that's probably the more likely scenario, but I can't rule it out going the other way. Not yet. Not until I see them get contact on the field.
Lewis Kristen Tilo at Lewis v. Kristen. How about Otis Anderson, who had a very underrated career with the Cardinals before he came here, by the way.
Very underrated career. And by the way, I also believe Otis Anderson should be in the Hall of Fame. Rookie of the year, was a comeback player of the year, was a Super Bowl MVP, had rushed for more than 10,000 yards in his career at a time when only about 10 guys had done it in NFL history. Why Otis Anderson is not in the Hall of Fame is beyond me.
That's because he was in Siberia and nobody cared about the Cardinals because they were terrible. I mean, that's got to be it, right?
I'm sure.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying that's why.
But he got the appropriate awards.
That's true. All right. So 10 minutes. I got three calls. Let's get you all in. Leo in New Milford. He's been holding the longest. Hi, Leo.
Doing well today. How's everybody?
Hello. Doing well as well. Thank you, Leo.
I'll tell you, you could spend 10 hours on running backs because you're going to get a controversial response. O.J. Anderson or Otis Anderson. You know, so many guys. I remember a guy walking up to Anderson when he came to the Giants and saying, you know, there used to be a guy, O.J. Anderson. I said, yeah, that was me. So a lot of people forget about him. But LT with Damian Tomlinson's got to be somewhere in that top 10. He was spectacular. But so was Marcus Allen. So you start going through and I said, oh, my God, I didn't realize there were so many great running backs.
And that's true.
Leo, that to me, and, you know, we run into the same thing in the NBA now with trying to compare, you know, the Warriors teams to Showtime Lakers. You're comparing LeBron to Jordan. You're comparing all these guys across eras. It's impossible. There's no right answer. It's just an opinion. Just say this guy was the best of his era, this guy was the best of his era, this guy was good at this guy was good at that, and you move on. I mean, to try to pincer whether, you know, Barry Sanders was, you know, better than, you know, Jim Brown or Emmitt Smith was better than Walter Payton, it doesn't make any sense to me. I don't see what the point is.
And just in the interest of completeness, we never even mentioned Curtis Martin, who's fourth on the all-time rushing list.
Wow.
How about that? I forgot about Curtis Martin. And how about Marshall Faulk, who's 11th on the all-time rushing list? And by the way, he could catch passes too.
By the way, there is a current – how about this? I'm going to ask you a little trivia question here, Leo. There is a current player – that played last year.
Yeah.
I think he gained 1,000
yards,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, he did.
That is number 8 on the all-time list. Who do you think that player is? Rushing list.
Is that you never would have thought it. He doesn't seem like an all-time great.
In fact, I will give everybody out there a chance to give that name until the end of the show.
All right. I can't even come up with a thought.
The dude has rushed for over 13,000 yards in his career.
Go ahead, Leo. I'm sorry. What's your next point?
Feeling about this, and I don't want to be Charlie-like, but I got to bring it up.
Yeah, no problem.
David Harris, would he fit in the Giants' scheme of things, or is it like, don't mess with success?
Nah, you know what, Leo? That's an interesting question, and Bob Pop and I were kind of spitballing this earlier today while he was doing his serious show. David Harris is a really good player. I mean, he can still play. He's not the player he used to be, but do I think he's a better player than B.J. Goodson is right now on first and second down against the run? Yeah, I think he probably is. But do you want to retard the growth of a young player like Goodson by giving his snaps to a veteran? Or is it beneficial for Goodson to learn under a guy like Harris for another year? So there are different ways to look at it. I do think David Harris will catch on with somebody and play a big role, a significant role, with a team in the NFL this year.
You know, I think for me, I'm going to say the same thing I said when Brandon Marshall was released. I think you make a phone call and you inquire and figure out the circumstances, what the guy wants to do with his career. You find out physically where he's at. You find out what his demands are. And they got all the right answers from Brandon Marshall, and that's why they signed him. Because all the answers were good, including, are you willing to be a second-fiddle receiver to Odell Beckham, which to me was the primary question.
I agree.
If he was not willing to come off the number one receiver spot, you could not sign Brandon Marshall. I think that one of the questions for Harris is very simple, okay? We're thinking of, we've got our nickel package square. Keenan Robinson plays the middle linebacker spot in the nickel package. We're looking for a guy who's going to be a run-stopping middle linebacker who's going to set the defense and call the signals. A, are you comfortable in that role? Because guess what? There's an appropriate salary that goes with that, and it's probably not going to be very, very large. Okay? Mm-hmm. And are you going to be a good locker room guy who is actually going to help B.J. Goodson, who we expect to be our guy of the future, maybe as soon as next year? And I don't know that you're going to get the right answers out of David Harris on those questions. He's probably going to say, I'd like to play three downs. That's not going to work. He's probably going to say, I want a multi-year contract because 1 year is going to put me on the street again.
Right.
Well, guess what? That's probably not going to fly.
And at that age, you do want a multi-year deal.
Of course you
deal.
Do. Uh-huh. And he's probably going to want a chunk of change because the reason the Jets cut him was because he didn't want to renegotiate his number.
Paul makes
sounds
all
like
good points.
Sounds like LeGarrette Blount all over again. The same kind of conversation.
There you go.
And Leo,
Frankie,
you know what?
Frankie Fuqua was the offense off of offensive player with the Pittsburgh Steelers, either the immaculate reception or the immaculate deception.
Thank you, so, Leo.
All right. All right.
Appreciate
have a great day.
And then, look, that's always the question when you're talking about signing a veteran. Fitting in salary cap, fitting in position, and all that sort of stuff.
Most people don't know Frenchie Fuqua was a Giant originally, and then they sent them to Pittsburgh.
Ah, man, Steve in D.C. already got the trivia question. I'm not sure if he looked it up and cheated, but
right.
He did get it. Frank Gore.
That's incredible.
Number 8.
Frank Gore.
And to me, I know Frank Gore has all those numbers. Not a Hall of Famer to me.
I don't consider him.
And I know
that
the numbers. And you know who's number 12 on that list, by the way? Edgerrin James. Do you think Edgerrin James is a Hall of Famer?
I don't.
Neither do I.
But
both those guys have the numbers.
And I would say I think he's closer to the Hall of Fame than Gore, but maybe not.
Because Edgerrin James is also a really good receiver, too.
Terrific. Much more of a dual threat than Frank Gore was.
And my bet is that both those guys, because of the numbers, a lot of times, you know, baseball 3,000 hits get you in.
Yeah.
I mean, both those guys had 10,000 rushing yards. It's hard not to get in when you got 10,000 rushing yards.
Well, no, because now the list. When O.J. Anderson got there, I think he was like either 9th, 10th, 11th, or 12th.
Right.
He was right in that area, and nobody paid any attention to it, and now he's like 25th. Even though he's got 10,000 rushing yards, he's like 25th on the all-time rushing list. That list is now so wide, so large, almost like the 400 home run list in baseball. It's now so large that you can't make an automatic haul anymore.
Let's go to Jeff in Rhode Island on line 4. What's going on, Jeff? How are you, pal?
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Doing well, Jeff. How are you?
Hi.
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about Frenchie Fuqua, but you guys already got to that. He was drafted by the Giants in 69 in
that's
the
correct.
11th round.
That's correct.
That's who that pass was intended for,
mm-hmm.
not
over the middle.
Not Franco.
And well,
I don't
the ball
remember
was
what the Giants got in return, but I just don't remember that.
Now, Jeff, if I remember right, Jeff, Paul, that was your first year covering the team in 69, right? No?
No, it wasn't. But I do know he was originally a Giant draftee, yes.
But yesterday you guys were talking about the end zone celebrations. And, you know, there's been a quote that's attributed to about three or four different NFL coaches and Bear Bryant as well. And being an old-time guy like I am, I kind of really like this one. It's, you know, the next time you get to the end zone, act like you've been there before.
Yeah. You know, I believe that was like Jim Brown.
I mean, it really works for me big time.
I think it was Jim Brown who did that. I don't think it was a coach. I think that was Jim Brown who said that.
Yeah, well, it was,
but I could be
wrong. Yeah,
it
was attributed to Vince Lombardi and Bear Bryant and Tom Landry and, you know, a few other guys.
You know the problem with that?
Well, but,
even though you're quoting all great legends, and I'm sure they're all on board with it, all the young whippersnappers of the world are going to say, they're a bunch of old-timers.
By the way,
who cares?
I want to add something to this. And, Jeff, I want to ask you the same question I'm going to ask Paul. I want to get both you guys' answer on this. Out of all the things that they took away, why is it still a penalty to take your helmet off?
Because
they think
that guys will use the helmet as a weapon and throw it, which would happen.
Well, so then say you can't throw the helmet.
Years ago, an offensive lineman for the Jets named Chris Ward took off a helmet and used it as a weapon by trying to hit somebody with it.
When did that happen?
It was, I
don't
can't
remember that at all. Was that in the 70s?
Look it up online. No. I think it was in the 80s.
Really?
Look it up online. You'll find it. Chris Ward, Jets, throwing helmet.
See, because to me, one thing that works against the NFL, and NFL players specifically, they all wear helmets. So it's hard to see what these guys look like. You know, baseball players, they have caps on, but you can see their face. Basketball players especially, more than any other sport, they're just in tank tops and shorts. You can see all what right. they look like. You don't know what these football players look like. So, to me, taking off the helmet in the end zone is not that big of a deal. People get to see what you look like. I think it helps the league. It helps everybody. I don't see why, out of all the things that you leave in as being a penalty, why that's the thing you leave in.
I'm sorry, Chris Ward. It was the reverse. It was Lyle Alzado of the Raiders in 1991 who ripped off Chris Ward's helmet and then whipped it at him.
Shocking that Lyle Alzado would do
yeah,
that, by the
I
way.
I knew Chris Ward was involved. My apologies to him. I hate to be wrong like that, so I'm glad to correct it.
Wow, that was 91, huh? 91. That was later than I think. I didn't remember that.
And that was it. And so the next offseason, the NFL created what is known as the Alzado Rule. Removal of another player's helmet shall result in ejection.
Yeah, but that's removal
fire.
Of another player's helmet. Emmitt Smith was taking his helmet off at the touchdowns for years before they made it a penalty.
I don't know when they made it your own. I can't say that.
I mean, it must
I don't have the date.
Well, it had to be the late 90s. Because, and remember, Emmitt Smith used to take off his helmet after every touchdown. And that was the guy that kind of made the rule after. I never really understood why people got so mad about it because you never get to see these guys' faces anyway. I don't see why – I never understood why that was a big deal.
But I do understand the thought that the helmet can be a weapon because Alzado used it. I remember when it happened.
Why would a guy after they score a touchdown want to use his helmet as a weapon?
Well, you know, whatever.
Is it player safety maybe in the celebration? You don't want the guy whacked in the head maybe?
I think the feeling is you nip it in the butt.
That's just me.
Take the judgment out of the hands of the officials. If the helmet comes off, it's a penalty. Case closed.
Oh, here we go. Dave Dominick, you got it right here.
Oh, you got it.
97 NFL rule changes. Removing helmets on the field during play. No player may remove his helmet while on the playing field. It will result in a 15-yard unsportsmanlike penalty. Exceptions are during timeouts and between quarters. The NFL has done this as an effort to reduce taunting and over exuberant celebrations and in the name of safety. So that thank you, Dave.
And
that
by the way, I think it's a good rule. I have no problem with the rule.
But to me, out of all the things that you have a problem with, if a guy would take his helmet, I mean, if the guy could do all these like gyrations, but he can't take his helmet off, it seems a little silly to me.
Whatever.
You know what I mean? Anyway.
One other thing, Johnny, you're gonna be taping things next week?
In terms of
well, the OTAs there, the mini camp,
of
I
course.
Should say.
Yes.
Yeah. Be like doing daily reports or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, that's good then. Okay, you guys have a good day, okay?
Okay. Yeah, Jeff, if you go to Giants.com, Jeff, make sure you check it out. And I'm at every OTA, me or Dan Salamone, and we're both writing reports on what we see at practice. So you can go and check that out as well. Nick in the Meadowlands will wrap us up. Hi, Nick. How are you?
Hey, fellas.
What do you got?
Hey, you're still talking about running backs, huh, Paul? Since the last time we were talking.
Yeah.
I should have made it a top 10 because you know what? LaDainian Tomlinson fits in there towards 10, you know what I mean? Because he had a lot of seasons where he was around 1,500 yards.
Yeah.
A few times he went over 1,500, like three times he went over.
I can probably be convinced that he's at the bottom of the top 10, but I'm not putting him anywhere near the top 5.
He's in the top 10 for me, you know what I mean? And like we were talking about, Eric Dickerson is there, you know what I mean? But when it comes to Walter Payton, Jim Brown, Emmitt Smith, Barry Sanders, see, there's different eras there. And Jim Brown, to me, you know what I mean? He was like offensive tackles with 250 pounds. He was like 230.
Yeah.
He used to run people over, man. And then how long did Emmitt Smith and Walter Payton play?
They both played well, Emmitt Smith played longer than Barry, obviously, because Barry retired early.
Well, not Barry. Barry played 10 years.
Right. Emmitt probably played around.
How long did Walter Payton and Emmitt Smith
Payton
play?
Played like 14
I think
years.
I think Emmitt probably played, what, 12 or 13? I'll look it up.
He might have even played longer than that.
He might have played longer than that because that's my point. Barry Sanders, he almost hit 2,000 yards twice. He did it once, and he ran for like 19-something one year.
Hey, look, this is what I always say. To me,
he only played 10 seasons, and he had 3,000 yards less than Emmitt Smith.
I know. And on
you know
a team,
I mean?
By the way,
he
that,
have,
that
he
could not throw the ball.
The record if he would have played for 14 or 15
years. Just remember
you know,
that.
He was phenomenal. Hey, Paul, did you know in college that in 11 games, Barry Sanders rushed for 2,600 yards, 39 touchdowns?
No, I did not.
In 11 games.
I did not.
Yes,
it makes you
that's why he was behind Thurman Thomas for a couple of years. Don't
and by
forget.
The way, by the way, Thurman Thomas was another great running back.
Thurman Thomas was another
really
one.
Good.
Who's
you know
right?
That?
Who's right on that second
right
level?
On that edge,
right.
I
would
I
put Thurman ahead of Roger Craig.
He made that offense phenomenal, man. Him and Jim Kelly, they were really really good.
Yep.
But the other thing with the guy was talking about David Harris. I was going to ask you guys about that, but I'm more on the side of it wouldn't be a bad thing if you could give him a 1-year contract and a veteran like him because he's a big time tackler. You know what I mean? That'd be a good thing for B.J. Goodson.
I think
somebody that's a real middle linebacker. You know.
It's simple for me. If he can't answer all the questions that I asked
in the appropriate way,
I couldn't sign him.
Right. Absolutely. And thanks for the call. We're over time. We got to go. Real quick, Payton played 13 years by my count. Emmitt played 13 with Dallas, and then he had 2 for Arizona, one of which he only gained 250 yards. So
his first season there was good.
No, second season was good.
The second one?
Believe it or not. Okay. He only played in 10 games his first season there. His second season, he actually rushed for 937 yards, only 3.5 yards per carry.
Right.
At that time, he was getting old, obviously. But the thing about Barry, and I always say this, best pure runner I've ever seen in terms of making guys miss slipperiness and things like that.
I'll tell you,
however,
Gail Sayers was right there.
Before my time,
obviously. I know.
So here's my one issue about – couple issues with Barry Sanders. One, he could never, ever in a million years be a short yardage back. Too much dancing.
You're right.
That's why he never got a lot of touchdowns and you never use him in the red zone. He would also have games where because he always tried to dance and make people miss – he had playoff games where he had negative rushing totals. That would never happen to a guy like Emmitt Smith, never happen to a guy like Walter Payton. And he also,
Jim Brown.
Believe it or not, and you wouldn't think this, Barry Sanders is also not a very good receiver.
He was not.
Which is amazing. You figure a guy that's quick and fast and could do all those moves,
no.
Not a good receiver.
Nope.
So that's why I always say as a pure runner, Barry Sanders is the most amazing running back I've ever seen.
Most dynamic, perhaps. Well, that, Sayers is right there.
That's why I used amazing, dynamic, same thing. But if you want to put all those things into a running back together, like how about pass protection? Was Barry Sanders a pass protector?
Not really.
That's what I'm saying. So complete running back, I think you could find guys that you would take over Barry. Pure runner? I'll take Barry Sanders any day of the week.
You know what was interesting about Sanders?
He was scary, man.
He would have one. 0, minus 5, 2, minus 4.
45.
And then 70.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right.
That's what he did.
And there were just plays where the defense would play it perfectly, have like 3 guys in front of him.
And they weren't going to catch him.
And it didn't matter.
I know.
He was so – it was like he was covered in Crisco. You could not – hold on to him. Guys would just slide off of him. It was amazing.
It was like he was running through the holes of the Swiss cheese. and you just couldn't tackle him. I know.
He was
like
he was like made of water, where he could fit into these smallest areas. And guys would slide all off him. It was just
incredible explosion and cutback ability no other.
Best start and stop guy I've ever seen.
The greatest jump cut
period.
In the history of pro football.
Period.
Anyway.
And Steve says he got that off the top of his head. Good job, Steve.
Okay.
Excellent work. Good job. You know what, though? Isn't Frank Gore a Miami guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve's a Miami guy.
Oh, that's why.
Right, Steve? Send me all on Twitter. Right. I think you're a Miami guy, if I'm not mistaken. I know you're – no, I think you're definitely a Miami guy, if I remember right. Anyway, good show today, guys. Spirited chat. A lot of good fun talk. This is a good show. Excellent work on the phones.
Can we promote tomorrow?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Lawrence Dawsey?
Yes.
Former NFL receiver with the Bucs and the Giants, among others. Now the wide receivers coach at Florida State will come on with us tomorrow on the phone for a short while to talk about Travis Rudolph.
And that's you and Lance, correct?
Correct.
Correct. And then it'll be me and Feagles on a special early time at 11 o'clock before we hit practice out there on the field. And maybe we'll try to record a spot previewing minicamp that we'll play at the end of that show so I can get out and watch all of practice. For DeTino, I'm Schmelk. Have a great one. We'll see you mañana on Giants.com. Adios.